Please be seated. Welcome to the Northern Nevada panel here in cases in Southern Nevada to save you all money and time. And I understand that it's going to snow in Carson City, so aren't you guys lucky? And the praise goes to my colleague, Justice Givens, who said, you know what, just because we're on the Northern panel doesn't mean we have to hear cases in Carson City. And since Michael's stationed down here, and I have a house down here, and Mark has a house down here, we're glad to be here. Our first case today is case number 69920, New Horizons Kids Quest 3, Inc. Versus District Court. Now, are you ready to proceed? Ms. Galati.
May it please the court, Felicia Galati appearing for New Horizons Kids Quest. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes of time.
I'll watch the clock for you.
And we appreciate you hearing this matter down here. Kids Quest is really appreciative of the fact that this court is considering this petition because it involves important legal and ethical issues regarding the attorney-client relationship, confidentiality, loyalty, and attorney disqualification. Attorney disqualification is part of this court's duty to safeguard the privacy of the attorney-client relationship, maintain public confidence in the legal profession, and protect the integrity of the judicial process. Kids Quest is very concerned and disturbed by the fact that it hired a law firm, Hall, Jaffe, and Clayton, to defend it in the Blue case, and was so defended for a period of 4 years in a case that went to trial while Mr. Schnitzer was an associate at that firm, that Kids Quest shared confidences with the attorneys at that firm during that time period, again while Mr. Schnitzer was at that law firm. And now Mr. Schnitzer is one of the attorneys suing Kids Quest in a substantially related matter.
As this particular matter, looking at the record that was put together down below, you are merely, based on what I see, imputing knowledge in
That's
this particular
right.
case, because what was proffered at the district court, there's no showing that the party, in fact, worked on the case, indicating that merely because the case was in the firm, there might be some knowledge. And the one associate didn't recall that was shared by him at that time with some other people involved.
That is correct, but by its very terms, Rule 1.9b is a rule of imputed disqualification.
Well, the real concern of this court, though, looking at Southern Nevada and our history over just the last 10 years, with firms imploding and attorneys moving because of downsizing and everything else, if we have people merely in law firms that, quote, did not work on things, and I know you're position is the imputed situation. We'd never have an attorney be able to move. They'd just be unemployed. Firms would have to hire directly out of law school to have people that didn't work on anything. Why should we consider what you're advocating under these particular facts harsh?
I would respectfully disagree with what Your Honor has said for the following reasons. You have already adopted a rule to allow lawyers to move among firms without these concerns. You have Rule 1.10E. It allows for screening in situations like this. So when Mr. Schnitzer went to his new firm, they already knew, Mr. Kravitz has testified that he knew that he was at the Hall firm. And of course, the Blue case was defended by the Hall firm. All they had to do was screen Mr. Schnitzer, and they didn't do that.
But the screening cases are somewhat distinguished from the cases in front of us today.
Well, the screening cases, I would say some are because they relate to non-lawyers, but there are others that do not. For example, the Ryan's Express decision, which you were a part of, in that case, this court held there was a presumption of shared confidences imposed by certain rules. One of those rules was 1.10, which was 160, and which is now 1.9b. So there is a similar presumption of shared confidences, and that is a case that is relevant to this issue and important in deciding this petition. The guiding principle in motions to disqualify is safeguarding the integrity of the court proceedings as well as maintaining public confidence in the legal profession. The rule at issue here is 1.9b and 1.10a. 1.9b prohibits a lawyer from representing a person in a substantially related matter in which the lawyer's former firm represented a client with interests that are materially adverse. The purpose of the rule is to protect former clients, to protect former client confidences. It specifically recognizes that there can be a conflict which requires disqualification even when the lawyer does not represent the former client and even after the lawyer has resigned from the firm. As such, it is essentially a rule that requires, that makes lawyers take confidences with them, and in our submission, including the imputed disqualifications and the imputed conflicts. The rule has to be applied not only based on the facts in the case, but also based on deductions, inferences, and working presumptions that can be made about the way in which lawyers practice together.
What's our standard of review, Ms. Galati, in this issue as an appellate court?
Well, I think there's a couple of standards of review that you could consider. We're asking you to do a de novo review because you are interpreting a rule, and you would do the same thing with respect to a statute. So that's what we're asking you to do. We also believe you could look at the abuse of discretion standard, as you have in many other cases, with respect to this matter, and also the reasonable possibility standard.
Is there any factual dispute between you and the other side here? I mean, I guess Mr. Schnitzer said he did absolutely nothing on this case when he worked for the previous law firm. Do you dispute that, or is that conceded as far as the trial court was concerned?
We don't dispute that, Justice Gibbons, but actually that's not really relevant, and here's the point. This is a rule that deals with lawyers who didn't represent them. It deals with firms at which the lawyer was that did represent the client. That's the whole point. Because when lawyers work together, it's not just the lawyer who represents the client that might be disqualified because of confidences he or she obtained. It is the other lawyers in that firm who are imputed with knowledge of the confidential information. In other words, the information is obtained by imputation.
What about a public defender who moves to the DA's office? Should we disqualify the DA's office?
Very different.
Why is it different?
And I could tell, there is a case similar, a little bit different than what you're asking, Justice Cherry. I can give you the name if you will allow me to. It's not in the pleadings because, of course, it wasn't our issue. It's the Camacho case.
Sure.
It was D.A. Wolfson. There was an attempt to disqualify the entire D.A.'s office because an attorney in Mr. Wolfson's former firm had represented the defendant. And this court considered that. I believe Justice Pickering was one of the judges on that panel. And this court applied the test set out in Nevada Yellow Cab and determined that the matters weren't substantially related. So it's not the same. You apply the same test, but there are also special rules for prosecutors and government lawyers that allow certain measures to be put in place to protect against the disclosure of confidential information or any concerns with respect to that. Those are special situations. You have, I forget the rule. I think it's 1 point. I'm not going to get it right now, but there's a special rule for prosecutors. Right. So as I've said, because Rule 1.9b was 160 sub 2, it's a rule of imputed disqualification. There is a presumption of shared confidences, which this court established in the Ryan's Express case, that applies here.
And counsel, who is the burden on going forward with this type of disqualification?
Well, the burden was on us, and we submit that we met the burden for the following reasons. We believe the district court abuses discretion in two ways. First, it didn't apply the law this court established and weighed in Nevada Yellow Cab. And second, it misinterpreted 1.9.
Why, in fact, is the Yellow Cab case controlling? Why is it distinguishable in this particular case?
Nevada Yellow Cab did deal with Supreme Court Rule 159 and Supreme Court Rule 160. However, the terms in those rules, which are the predecessor rules to 1.9 and 1.10, are essentially the same, and therefore the terms must be interpreted in the same way because the rule didn't change. The numbers changed.
Counsel, you are putting forth an absolute that takes away any discretion of the district court judge and likewise of this court to look at the facts in the case and ascertaining whether or not the operative word is represent, whether or not there's representation or knowledge. And again, this general imputation of imputed knowledge in the realm of the profession today, and even looking at our case law and including the federal district court, they look to see what involvement, what activity, and whether the lawyer knowingly represented the person, whether or not they had some imputed knowledge. And as you said, yes, there's an issue which is a presumption, but it's not an absolute, as to in small firms having some kind of general knowledge of what's going on. But they don't make that an absolute bar. So the concern, looking at what the district court judge did, where they basically stopped at the end of the first and said, there's no showing that the person has any knowledge. So it's a concern, and it's a public policy concern we have. So I'm really interested in the advocacy, and I understand your position. As to that, I understand the change, so to speak, just textually and renumbering. But there's been some movement, so it's just not as absolute as you're trying to portray to us today.
Well, I would say that the cases that already exist essentially are situations where the lawyer did represent the client, or the lawyer had some contact with the client, for example, with respect to a prospective client. So we can't be burdened, if you will, by the fact that there's no published case or even an order with respect to our particular situation. The only one that exists is the Camacho case, and again, it's a district attorney situation that's different than ours. So that is why you have what you have in the case law and no other specific case law. We're not asking you to disregard the facts. We want you to look at the facts. We want you to apply the facts to the test that you've already established in Nevada Yellow Cat and Wade. There is no reason
to... There are other cases, Leibowitz versus 8th Judicial District, a 2003 case, that mere access to the adverse parties filed during the former employment is insufficient to warrant disqualification. And there are a couple of others before I get into it that talks about the burden of coming to the court and stating in terms of it's not just implied. There's a little bit more. I'll call it implied plus.
All right. I don't know what the proper term is, but here's how I'll address your question or your comment, if you will. The Leibowitz case was a non-lawyer employee screening case. Leibowitz overruled Ciafone to allow non-lawyers to be screened. That's the distinction. There is a distinction between non-lawyers and lawyers. We cannot decide this matter and proceed thinking that lawyers practice in a bubble when they're in a law firm. We don't. We talk about our cases. We talk to the other lawyers in the cases. The other lawyers can hear us talking about the cases. There's access to files, etc. It just doesn't happen. We do not practice in a vacuum. You have to consider that when you consider this matter. So the distinction between Leibowitz in this case is you're dealing with non-lawyers versus dealing with lawyers. It's much more significant when you're talking about lawyers. And you've already said in Wade...
Do you distinguish Edwards versus 360 Communication at all from the federal court?
Well, here's the thing in Edwards. So that's a federal court decision, right?
I'm all
for it because I think Edwards supports our position. In Edwards, I think it was Judge Pro, came to the conclusion that Nevada specifically rejected the language that was in the model rule 1.9b. Therefore, it did not allow for disqualifications as you have right now, where a lawyer doesn't represent the client and a lawyer leaves a firm and goes to another firm. So, if you take what Edwards says and you apply it to this case,
your position that you're quoting is a very narrow reading of Edwards and what the judge said, because the judge also indicated, thus, it appears that in Nevada, an attorney who was not directly involved in a law firm's representation of a client cannot be imputed with actual knowledge of confidential information.
True, but look at your rule. Your rule says that there can be a conflict for a lawyer who doesn't represent and for a lawyer who resigns. And he came to that conclusion after determining that you rejected 1.9b because we didn't have that language before. We do have that language now. Therefore, you have to consider that and apply it. And I just want to remind you about a couple of things you said in Wade. I'm sure you already remember.
You also, out of time? At this point, you got about a minute left. You might want to save that for rebuttal.
Okay.
And what I'll do is I'm going to give you extra 2 minutes, so you'll have a total of 3 minutes. Mr. Kravitz, I'm going to give you 17 minutes.
I don't really need it, Your Honor.
Okay.
Thank you.
In this case, we never know what questions will be asked.
Well, that's true.
And may I please report? I am going to give Ms. Galati a total of 3 minutes in rebuttal.
Thank you, sir.
And counsel, Mr. Schnitzer and I are here today to ask this court to reject the petition and the writ. This is a case which is very distinguishable from every case that you've ever had where you've really dealt with imputed disqualification. The fundamental fact that is missing in this case is knowledge by Mr. Schnitzer of the previous case, working on the case, representing the client. This record is absolutely clear. And what really upset me as a lawyer getting hit with this kind of motion, because it's in essence an ethical charge against us, is that they knew before they filed the motion to disqualify, they knew from Michael Hall, who was the principal partner in the Hall Jaffe firm, that Mr. Schnitzer never worked on the case, that he had nothing to do with the Blue case. You have my affidavit that goes and tells you quite specifically how I got involved. When we got this case in, the first thing that I did was I did something really remarkable. I got on the computer and I looked at the district court files to see if there were any other cases against KidsQuest. And what did I find? I found the case called Bloom. I called up the plaintiff's lawyer. That's what my affidavit says. He told me, I settled it. I can't give you any of the discovery materials because they put a protective order on it. But the one thing that I saw at that moment was, guess what? It was Hall Jaffe who defended. Now, Jordan came from Hall Jaffe. So I immediately called him in and said, did you ever touch that case? Do you ever work on it? Do you know any of the results? And the answer was no, 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 no. I didn't do anything to do with it. Mr. Schnitzer actually worked for Mr. Jaffe himself instead of Mr. Hall. That was his principal partner that he worked for. He didn't work on those kinds of matters. They were mostly car accidents. So the next thing that I did is I went out and I looked nationally because I thought this has got to be a pattern. And we found this case in Minnesota. Again, I called the lawyer. He gave me discovery materials, not the answers, but the discovery itself to use, which they don't like. And it's been fight after fight after fight after fight about getting even the simplest of documents. But the bottom line is I knew from the very beginning that Jordan never worked the case. It would have concerned me if he had. Because I really have a problem, even to this day, with lawyers that leave my firm and go somewhere else when they want to work on cases against my company. And screening, or what we used to call the Chinese wall, still gives me concerns. But we've always told the clients, and we get the consent. There was no need to screen here, because Mr. Schnitzer never worked the file. The other thing that I would have thought would have been very nice for the petitioner to do is perhaps get an affidavit from their own client. Perhaps present the bill that showed that Mr. Schnitzer had worked on a matter for any part of KidsQuest, or to get an affidavit from the risk manager over there that said, you know, I spoke to Jordan Schnitzer about something involving a case. Because if there was prior representation, if there was actual knowledge or confidential material or discussions with the client, the whole case shifts. Then you invoke yellow checker star, the yellow case, you invoke the Wade case, you invoke all your other cases and say, you know what, there should be an imputed disqualification and potential screening. Because the key fact is confidential information or formal representation occurred. So we adopted, and Justice Douglas, you pointed out the Edwards case. There is a remarkable comment by Judge Crowe there, and he says, it needs to be recognized today that many lawyers practice in firms, that many lawyers to some degree limit their practice to one field or another, and that many move from one association to another several times in their careers. If the concept of imputation were applied with unqualified rigor, the result would be radical curtailment of the opportunity for lawyers to move from one practice setting to another, and of the opportunity of clients to change counsel. You start out with a basic rule that says this is the harshest of remedies. You don't disqualify a counsel unless you're going to do something that could damage the former client. And that's your cases. And then you look at your cases and you say, okay, every time there has been formal representation or confidential information, that's troublesome. We need a very rigorous standard. We adopt, in essence, a presumption that there is imputed information going back and forth and there should be this disqualification. But after the Edwards case came down, something else happened. You adopted the ABA model code. The ABA model code lays out for you exactly what's to occur when the lawyer never worked on the case and when the lawyer never got any confidential information and he never had any contact with the client. And it's set forth in 1.9b, 2. And 2 says you disqualify if the lawyer had information about whom the lawyer had acquired information protected by rules 1.6 and 1.9. And they gave an absolutely perfect example in the ABA model code. Paragraph B operates to disqualify the lawyer only when the lawyer involved has actual knowledge of information protected by confidentiality rules. If a lawyer with one firm acquired no knowledge or information relating to a particular client of the firm, and that lawyer later joined another firm, neither the lawyer individually nor the second firm is disqualified from representing the client in the same or related matter, even though the interests of the two clients conflict. They told you right there. This is the rule that you have now adopted, and it is what you haven't really talked about in all the prior cases. What happens when the lawyer never worked for the client? What happens when the lawyer acquired no confidential information?
Mr. Kravitz, my understanding from Ms. Gladi is that her client doesn't dispute that Mr. Schnitzer has no knowledge of anything that happened in this case when he was with Mike Hall's law firm. So I think that's a given, you know, yes, from the way I understand the record. So it's just the interpretation of the rule that Ms. Gladi made. And you're saying this is, in essence, commentary to the rule, this example here, and we should follow this example.
Yes, it's an exact example drawn right from the code itself, under the rule that we now have. And they make that distinction. It follows along the lines of Judge Crowe and Edwards. And like I say, what Judge Scan ultimately found is every case that you're citing, Ms. Gladi, are distinguishable. There was either actual representation by the laterally moving lawyer or there was confidential information exchange. Then the test becomes different. Justice Turney asked what the standard is. Mike, we've known each other a long time. I'm sorry. The standard is abuse of discretion. The record is really clear in this case. There are so many affidavits that lay out what the roles were, the fact that he had no knowledge, how he acquired the information that I've been using, and what we've been doing. There's no need to screen a lawyer who has no knowledge. Her decision, Justice Scan's decision, is correct. There was no abuse of discretion, and there shouldn't be any imputed disqualification without prior representation. And thank you very much.
Any other questions, Justice Douglas?
Thank you, Mr. Kraft.
Thanks, Gary. 3 minutes.
Okay, I'm going to talk real fast. Interrupt me if you need to. The way you need to decide this matter is by applying your test, Nevada Yellow Cab and Wade. Very simple. Three elements for Nevada Yellow Cab. Was there an attorney-client relationship? Are the two matters substantially related? And is the current representation adverse to the former client? Then there's the Wade test for substantial relationship, factual determination about the scope of former representation, evaluate whether it's reasonable to infer that confidential information would have been given to a lawyer representing a client in such a matter, and is the information relevant to this case? If you take those tests and you apply them to this case, you must disqualify the plaintiff's attorney.
What about the example Mr. Kravitz raised? It's laid out in the model code.
Okay, so
What's your position on that?
Right. With respect to the comments, first of all, they submitted something that was not in the record below, and so technically it should not be considered, and it's not properly before this court. But even so, Mr. Schnitzer grabs onto one comment. There are other comments underneath that same rule that support our position. Comment 6 is the one I referred to earlier without mentioning it, that you have to apply the rule aided by inferences, deductions, and working presumptions about the way in which lawyers practice together in a firm. That's what we want you to do. In addition, comment 3 says a conclusion can be made about confidential information or the possession of confidential information based on the nature of the services the lawyer provided and the information that would ordinarily be given in that kind of a case. What do we have here? The Hall firm defended this case, took it to trial. That is the highest situation possible in terms of acquiring confidential information. We gave you the Dunkley affidavit, which says that information was confidences were conveyed to the firm regarding practices, policies, training, supervision, etc., to support the defense of that case. So it was given to the firm. That's how you get to the point of dealing with the confidential information. They want to turn this whole analysis on its head. We respectfully request you do not do that, that you follow your own tests, that you apply the facts, and don't do it backwards. What they want you to do is just look at, did Mr. Schnitzer acquire confidential information? Well, you said in Wade that the court can't inquire into that and can only conduct this realistic appraisal about whether confidential information might have been obtained in such a representation. So you're undoing what you've said for this specific rule. It absolutely makes no sense. On the one hand, you have to apply Nevada Yellow Cab and Wade and do this analysis without asking about confidences. And then on the other hand, you have to turn around and look at the confidences. It just doesn't make any sense. Can I make just one more comment?
Go ahead.
Okay. With respect to the Hall matter, Mr. Kravitz is asking you to rely on perjurious testimony. I never spoke to Mr. Hall. I did not speak to Mr. Hall until after they filed their opposition saying that I spoke to him. Never happened. And Mr. Hall's affidavit is clear, he did not speak to me. So, and just remember what we're dealing with here. This isn't a rule about a lawyer who represented a client. This is a rule about a lawyer who was at a firm that represented the client. That's the important distinction. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Galati. Thank you, Mr. Kravitz. I expected good arguments, and both sides lived up to my expectations. This matter.